Morning, Rabbi Yisai. As always, our limud is l'schus refor shleima of Yosef Dov ben Chayla, shtav refor shleima b'korav. Boysai, so we've been learning about the rules of Tehillah, and we said yesterday and the day before that we can skip the obligation to tell the person off, to be moichiach, the rebuke. We can skip that if we come to the conclusion that he's not going to listen anyway, and it's a complete waste of time. And then we said that it has to be then in front of three people. For the reasons that we gave, there were three reasons why you'd have to then do it in front of three people. Says the Chofetz Chaim, just to remind you, and you all know this anyway, but just to remind you that the three people who listen to this Lashon Hara, Lo Toyeles, are only allowed to half believe it. They're only allowed to believe it to the extent that they protect themselves. Let's say that the accusation is that the person gives short measures when he sells a kilo of beans. Yeah, that he only gives 900 grams in the packet that is marked a kilo. And most people don't realize. Yeah, we call it in English. They call it now shrinkflation. Yeah, shrinkflation. Yeah, a hundred gram jar of Nescafe now has become 95 grams, and the big jar is only 190. And people don't realize the price stays the same. Price stays the same. Remember the Binyamin are the what's it called? All the liqueurs. Yeah. So they brought a new bottle. You know, new bottle. The price didn't change, but it went down from 700 milliliters to 500 milliliters in the bottle, and people are still paying £23 for the same bottle. Yeah. So here, what we're saying is that if you've received this report about the person that he's doing something illegal. By the way, I'm not saying they're doing anything illegal. I'm saying that you've just got to be careful. You've got to watch when you buy in the shop, because things are going up in price without people realizing it. The price didn't change. It's just that the packet got smaller. But if you hear that somebody is actually selling a packet and people don't realize that there's less in it and it's not a complete packet or anything like that,
you're not allowed to say it.
Then you're allowed to say it, we said. But it's Letoyeles, yeah? But you have to follow the seven rules. You have to try and spoken to him. And if you didn't speak to him because you think he won't listen anyway, then you're allowed to tell in front of other people, three people. But the people who listen are not allowed to believe that he's doing it, but they're allowed to protect themselves. And the Chofetz Chaim writes something like this, that it's forbidden for the listeners to believe he did it. It's forbidden for the listeners to believe that this Lashon Hara about the person, and therefore to do anything about him. You can't bashmutz him, you can't stop him from having an aliyah, you can't prevent him from davening Fanumat. He can say Kaddish, you have to give him the same respect that you gave him till now. You've got to treat him perfectly equally as if he'd done nothing. On the other hand, be careful when you buy from him. On the other hand, you've got to protect yourself. So you're only allowed to half believe it to the extent I'm going to protect myself from the avla that he might be doing, but on the other hand, I'm not actually allowed to be mekabel the Lashon Hara that he did the thing. It's just a suspicion, in other words. And the Chofetz Chaim writes as follows. He says, this may seem like a difficult approach to take, which it is, because, you know, it's sort of a palginon dibure, that we believe him to the extent that I protect myself just in case he's a crook, but I'm not allowed to believe that he is a crook. Yeah, says the Chofetz Chaim, it may be a difficult approach to take. If Hashem requires it of us, we can be sure that it's within our power to accomplish. If the halacha demands that that's what you've got to do, that you've got to separate, somehow filter out in your mind, that I have to be careful because I'm dealing with this guy and he might be a crook, and therefore I have to protect myself, but I'm not allowed to believe that he is a crook, and I'm certainly not allowed to do anything in practical terms, because I believe that he's a crook, therefore I won't give him an aliyah, or I will try and humiliate him in public, or I'll walk around town speaking about him. None of those things. You can't do any of that, but you can protect yourself. That's the limit of what you can do. One final thing that the Chofetz Chaim says, the Gabbai Tehillos, until our speaker arrives, and that is as follows. He says that there's a difference between if the person who you're speaking about, yeah, that you're speaking Lo Toyeles, whether he's been accused of doing an Aveira d'Oraisa, an Aveira b'nodon la'mokoim, or an Aveira b'nodon la'chaveiroi. We've been talking all the time now about Aveiras b'nodon la'chaveiroi, somebody who's swindling, somebody who's injured. I saw him, he crashed in somebody's car and he drove off, or whatever it is. That was b'nodon la'chaveiroi, that's what we've been talking about until now. But it could be that we're talking about a b'nodon la'mokoim. that I'm speaking Lashon Hara L'Toyeles for some reason, yeah? For instance, the Chofetz Chaim says that if you're speaking about Lashon Hara L'Toyeles about somebody, then it has to, and it's talking about Bein Odom La'Mokoyim, then you have to fulfill the seven rules of Toyeles. But besides that, you have to be 100% sure that he's done an Aveira, which is also one of the rules of Toyeles. So he says that the rule is, within that rule of Toyeles, the 100% he did an Aveira, that he's got to have done something that every from person knows you're not allowed to do. So if he is Mechalel Shabbos, in a way, not something duckistic as to whether or not, you know, we're not talking about whether or not he carried in the Eruf, right? Because it could be he's okay. Yeah, right? We're talking about somebody who is Mechalel Shabbos when you know clearly, yeah? Or somebody gives an example, for instance, of somebody who has an affair with a married woman. Yeah, everybody knows Loisinov, everybody knows. There isn't a person in the world, Kimat, who doesn't know that the Torah asks Loisinov. So therefore, if the Lashon Hara that you're speaking about this person, and there is a tachlis to it, L'toyeles, i.e. look after your wives, yeah, protect your wives and they come in contact with this man, or, you know, whatever it is, I'm trying to think of other examples, but if it's a deraisa, then it has to be something that is clearly, that everybody knows, is also midaraisa. That there can't be any doubt in your mind whatsoever that he's actually committed an aveira b'mezid. Masha'ekein in Benon Lachaveros, that doesn't apply at all. In Benon Lachaveros, that doesn't apply at all. So that's the. I think we've. I almost think that we're almost finished the halachas of Toyeles. And they are difficult. The Chofetz Chaim will say at the end of the siman, we're nearly there. And in fact, the end of the siman is the end of Hilchos Lashon Hara in Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim has a sefer divided into two sections. The Chofetz Chaim chelek of it is the practical halachas, which is like Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Hilchos Lashon Hara, and then he has a sefer Shmiras Haloshein. We're doing at the moment the first half of the practical sefer, which is Hilchos Lashon Hara, and we move on from there to Hilchos Rechilos at the end of Klal Yud, which is where we are now. We're approaching the end, and then we'll start in Yetz Shem Hilchos Rechilos. In Hilchos Rechilos, this sefer doesn't exist. This is all about Lashon Hara only, but we will learn Hilchos Rechilos and Yetz Shem. Difference between Lashon Hara and Rechilos is that Lashon Hara is just speaking something bad about a person. You speak about something that he's done bad, but there are no, then love Africa consequences. There may not be consequences. If I speak about him that he was Mechalel Shabbos, yeah, then, you know, there are no consequences in that. If I speak about something that somebody did to somebody else, yeah, but there are no following, there's nothing that follows on from that. Hilchos Rechilos is one stage worse. It's where I'm speaking Lashon Hara, and as a result of that, I'm going to create enmity. As a result of that, I'm going to create some sort of reaction that the person is going to take, and as a result of my Lashon Hara has consequences. So Rechilos is one step up from the Lashon Hara Alein. Lashon Hara Alein is just interesting information. I sit across the Shabbos table, I'm sitting across the Shabbos table, and I'm telling the family there's something interesting happening in Shul. Yeah? Pliny went up to Pliny, the other guy, and he slapped him across the face, in front of everybody. Yeah? That's Lashon Hara. Clearly, that's pure.
More than three people,
whether you're allowed to say it, I don't know, right? But it is still pure Lashon Hara. Yeah, it's pure Lashon Hara, right? But what happens if, yeah, the person that I'm telling, yeah, he went up to, I say that somebody went up to someone else in Shul today and he slapped your brother. Yeah, or he slapped your husband. Yeah, then there is a consequence. Because that person is now going to take on, you know, it's going to be annoyed with the person who did it. Yeah, if it's strangers, then it's nothing to do with me. It's just interesting, an interesting piece of information. But if it's somebody that I know, it's somebody that I have a connection with, then obviously a person's going to want to defend that person, especially if it's a relative of his or somebody with whom he's close, and therefore he is, and therefore that's Hilchos Rechilos. So that we will start in Yad Hashem. There is quite a lot of duplication between Hilchos Lashon Hara and Rechilos, obviously, because Rechilos is Lashon Hara plus. Yeah. Then there is Moitzi Shemra. And Moitzi Shemra means that what I'm saying is not true. Till now, the whole of Hilchos Lashon Hara and the whole of Hilchos Rechilos is talking about things that actually happened, about things that are actually true. But you're spreading bad news about people, even though it's true. If it's not true, then it's Moitzi Shemra.
Which is worse?
Which is worse? I would think Moshe Shemra is worse because it's not even true. But Rechilus is worse than Lashon Hara, clearly, because Rechilus has consequences. Rechilus has results rather than being purely a piece of information. Dudi Vestepzung, no? Yeah? Okay. So Dudi's going to fill in at the moment for hours until the speaker arrives, which will be in Yetz Hashem Bekorov Mamash.
This is a very, very interesting Rasha in the beginning, which explains that although Aharon HaKohen was the Zayde, he also had another Zayde, and the other Zayde was called Yisroi. And Yisroi had Shemetz of Geiras, and Yisroi was Mefatem Avi Imoil Agulim La'avoydezura. So the first thing that comes to mind is
Yisroi was connected to Aritamayim.
Oh, it was very much connected to Eluza, to Pinchas, because Eluza was really essentially connected two ways to Moshe Rabbeinu. Eluza was a son-in-law of Yisroi. And Moshe was a son-in-law of Yisroel as well. So he was his brother-in-law and he was his uncle. Twice.
He didn't know that, sorry.
That's why we're mentioning it to him. But now that you've got this grandson called Pinchas, then you can be Makasha, the line, both ways. You can say, who goes out with a spear and goes and murders two people in one go, a man and a woman, and holds them up like this? This is a wild man, an aggressive person. Person who's got within him traits of murder. And yeah, of course, a mota zayde v'yisroi, ago. So it makes sense. Comes the Torah, says to you, yeah, but he also had another zayde. And the other one was Oyev Shulem Oroidev Shulem. He had him with him the traits innately of peace. And the Rabbein Shulem says here, Hineni Noisen Loyes Berisi Shulem, notwithstanding the fact that you will associate him to this Zayda and say, yeah, sure, you know why he did this? Because he's a bloodthirsty man, because he comes from a Zayda called Yisroi. So the Torah says, I'm telling you that this actually stopped the plague and caused the cessation of death. And therefore this act, which I've looked on the face of it as being something which was murderous and wild and aggressive, was in fact an act of peace. And the Rebbein Shalom is the signatory. L'chein emoy. There's a vuv there, vuv ktir, the vuv is split. Sometimes you have to be oyev shulam, and sometimes you have to be roidev shulam. How does roidev come to shulam altogether? It's a paradox. Peace, and roidev is a pursuer and peace. A little of an oxymoron, heißt das auf Englisch, nein? Therefore, the Bein Shalom says you should know that this was an act of peace. It doesn't necessarily sound like it, because sometimes when the Doilem have their disputes and we think that, whoa, it's Titzuch HaShlegerei, but sometimes you need to be a Roidev in order to get to Shulam. Doesn't always sound like that in our minds, but that's what the Rebbein Shalom says. But coming back to this, you might ask yourself a question, yeah? He, Yisroi, on the face of it, was an archbishop of Canterbury in his own right, and he was went from one Avodah to the next until he finally, eventually found the way that Yiddishkeit is the truth. But if you would ask yourself a question: would the Archbishop of Canterbury go into the stables and take calves and put his boots on and start feeding them and reinstippen, you know, to be mefatem? It's not exactly what you would call an elegant piece of work. It's not something which lends itself to the aristocracy. You have the serfs and the meshamshim leminayim that would do this type of work. But if you are a mechapes ha'emes, and what really counts is the nth degree, what is really the truth, then you will say, doesn't matter about my kuvot, I'm prepared to roll my sleeves up and put the boots on, go into the stables and really go to town and take the fodder around, slip inside the calf, fat them up, because the shem for the avoid the zura, and that's what I really mean. If I really mean it, then in which case I will go to the nth degree, because that's the nekidas u'emes. And maybe that's the nekidas u'emes that drove his einiki called Pinchas to say, Lamdaini Rabbeini asks Moshe Rabbeini, you said the boy Laramas canoe and pogim boy. I can't stand by and watch a new CB Yisrael commit an act like this. It's unheard of. And therefore he reacted with an Akidas Huemes. An Akidas Huemes is a knee-jerk, how do you say, reaction. Because Haboy Laramas canoe and pogim boy can only work when kanuas is effectively something that you do because you feel my father's kuvot is at stake. And if somebody came into a besmedrish, however humble or gentle person would be, and he would humiliate your father, you would stand up and you would protect him. And you wouldn't let this person who is the humiliator get away with it. And some sort of fifth sense would take over you and you would react accordingly. And that's
emotional, not intellectual.
So I'm saying that kanuas is halucha v'ein moirinkein. You hit it on the nail. Halucha v'ein moirinkein means that in the moment that you ask it as, what am I supposed to do right now, the answer is nothing. But if you get up and you do it, then the answer is you've done the right thing. So you say, how does it work? And the answer is, yeah, exactly so. If you really feel that way, and you feel that the kuvot of the Rebbein Shlolem is at stake, and now you've got a new Sibi Yisrael who's cohabiting with the Shikse, and doing so in public, and there's a Chilul Hashem, and you feel, I cannot stand by and be party to this, and you get up and you do it, then the halacha is that you are a kanui. Because kanui is not something you can pass. Either you
get it very wrong. Look at this guy that killed somebody on the gay march in the shrine. He's a kanui as well.
Yeah, well, you know what? I didn't know, number one, that there was a gay march. Number two, I didn't know there was a murder, but perhaps we'll discuss it later. At this moment of time, we have to understand that the essence of kanuas is a very, very tricky one. You know, there was a story I remember a long time ago in Yerushalayim that the man came in and saw, in the old days, they used to have only a poike, which means the drummer used to play at chasanas, because in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to have live music. Today there's a lot of hetairam for people when one of the parts of von Chitzluritz, or both of the parties of von Chitzluritz, and it's not absolutely in Yerushalayim that you are allowed to have music in the band, but in those days they were very, very, very strict about it, and the only musical accompaniment they used to have was a drummer, and maybe they had a singer as well. And a fellow came into Chasana, and there's a clarinetist playing. And I think his name was Chaikin, was a famous kanui, but he was an El Chayid. Everybody knew about him, that he meant 100% Hashem Shemai. And he walked carefully over to the band, and he asked the clarinetist, when he took a break, a nice instrument, how much it cost you? When I come to buy such a clarinet, says this cost $300 in those days. It's a lot of money. He says, can I see it? Yeah, pleasure. Takes it, shows him the clarinet, takes the clarinet, smashed it over his knee, took out his wallet, took out $300 and gave it to him. He said to him, Zad Gesind. So you ask, it's a bit of a wild thing to do, you know, to take somebody's instrument, it's a mazik, and question me what the answer is. Does it make sense? You don't agree with it. Frankly, I would also be inclined to think along the same lines. But the Master Kanuas is that if he meant it genuinely, I'm speaking about there's two sides to every coin. So although we can see it on one perspective, the other perspective, however, is that the man felt there's an affront to what is considered ungenemene Sache in Yerushalayim, that they don't play music, because he felt the Chorban, as we do right now in the 3 weeks, and it was to an extent, and it was a Poyrutz Geder, but he was prepared to pay through his, to speak through his pocket, and he took out the $300 and he gave it to him, but they didn't want Chas V'Shalom that there should be a, like you say, a Poyrutz Geder in Yerushalayim. Which brings us back to the what we speak about, the and the Israel was a Oyev Shulam, a Roidev Shulam, and that it's Kanu and Pokemboy because it's Halucha Va'ein Moiren Ken. So we spoke about various perspectives, and then he says there's also a beautiful Nafke Minna between the Kotzke Rebbe and the Vulke Rebbe, which comes up here also very nicely. What is it? It says, Besoicham means amongst them. What does it mean, Besoicham, amongst them? So, when they were children, somebody asked them, the Kotzke Rebbe and the Vulke Rebbe, he says, wie ist der Eibishte? And they gave him a kopik. I'll give you a coin. One kopik, if you'll tell me, wie ist der Eibishte? So he says to the Vulke Rebbe, so the Vulke Rebbe is a little boy, says, Yitzchik, wo suchst du? So he says, wie ist der Eibishte? Wie melotte maran. In other words, wherever you let the Eibishte in, that's where he is. If you really want him to be in you, then he'll be there. So he says, wo suchst du, Mendele? So Mendele says, excuse me, my kopik, you give me one kopik, if you tell me where he is. Ich helde geben zwei kopik, es muss suchen, wie er ist nicht. I'll give you two if you'll tell me where the Rebbein Shalom is not. So when they got older, and they came to this parsha of Pinchas, so the Vulke Rebbe touched it. Bekanei es kinusi besoicham. That the Rebbein de Lebuke said, Bekanei es kinusi, notwithstanding the fact that he was a zealous man, and a jealous man, kavyuchel for the Rebbein Shalom, and it was a midas kanuas, but nonetheless, he still was able to remain besoichom, that he still remained part of the Klal Yisur. And that didn't mean that he became isolated or separated or aloof because of this experience, because he was Bekanes Kenusi, but people still recognize that he was besoichom. Maybe a little similar to the gentleman with the clarinet. And the other, Andre Mendel Kotzke said, the Heilige Kotzke Rebbe, Bekanes Kenusi besoichom, that the very fact that the Klal Yisrael were at this point able to recognize that a perilous act had infiltrated the Kedisha of Klal Yisrael, how could it possibly be that Yidden should be able to tolerate Azar Masa, that Anusi should be Yisrael, should be Mezana with Cosby Bastia, and therefore he wanted to make sure that they and he were on two completely separate planets. And the Besoicham heißt Zwischen sei, that he was, that Yidden were on one side and Zimri ben Sudi was on another side. So you have two Mahalchem of two Tzadikei Olam, which you can see that from their childhood they differentiated, they went on different paths as they developed this thought process. It also went to explaining the same Pusik of Besoicham too. So now let's go on, maybe perhaps to a later part in the Seder. The Seder speaks there. This morning somebody mentioned on the question of Benoit Selofchot, it was just a Herr Ure, but a very nice one. That says that they all stood in front of Moshe Rabbeinu and hung. And then the Benoit Selofchot essentially said to Moshe, you know, if our mother is considered married and having children, then we need to get the Yerisha. And if not, then she should do Yibum, because if we don't count as anything, then she has had no children, so let her go and be Misyabim to another man. This was how they presented the question. Anyway, and the answer, the response of Moshe was Vayakev Moshe's Mishputan Lifnei Hashem. So Moshe Feinstein apparently once was before Bezen, and when he came there, they said to that there's a woman there, Zalmun, who's been kicked out of her premises by some landlord, and he's demanding the money, and she's not paying it, and now she's going to be without roof over her head. And the lady came up to Rab Moshe prior to the beginning of the court case of the Din Torah. And she said, Shiva should know that, you know, I've got 4 or 5 children, and I've got not a penny to my name. I'm not paying the rent because I'm in a position where I've got it, and I just simply don't have it, and I'm just trying to put together. And as she started to express herself, she started to have tears coming down her eyes. And then Reb Moshe said to the Gabum there, he says, Ich ken zah mekan dein. I can no longer pass him for this Din Torah, because there's what we call Shoicha Devurim. And therefore, since this woman came to me, she touched me, she reached me in a place where I'm already influenced by her words, I cannot sit and advocate one way or the other, because before we start, I'm already drawn towards what she said. So now, when Benoit Lofchot came, and they said to Moshe, Uvini, heißt Mes Bamidbar, that he passed away in the middle, Zukta Bavaloyahoyba Das Korach. It was on your side, it was on the other side. Because after all, you know why he died? Because he was a Mekoshe Shaitzim. You know, he wasn't even from the Meraglim, he was always on the right side, he was together with you. So Moshe Rabbeinu felt at that point, right, that he's influenced now, and he can no longer pass me, so to speak, impartially. So he said, there's only one way. Vayakrev Moshe's Mishput Lefnei Hashem. I'm out of this one. I cannot pass in this. So therefore, he handed it over completely to the Eibishter. I remember the vote long ago. This morning, I looked for it together in the Chavrisa, and we found it in a Rishon. Rabbi Nebuchai. It says exactly this. And then after, once he said the vote, he says all the reasons why the vote doesn't hold water. But that I leave to you to do for yourself.
Ramesh Navias.
Yeah.
Ramesh Navias. Because Navias. How did he know Rabbeinu Bachai knew the story of Ramesh Feinstein?
No. Maybe he had a similar experience. Okay. Zegit. Okay. So now it brings us to the part where Moshe Rabbeinu is asking the Rabbeinu Shlomo to step in and to find a replacement as a leader for Klal Yisrael. What did he say? He said, Yivkoid Hashem lekay urichos lechol busa ishalu aidu. Asher yaitze lifnayhem v'asher yuvo lifnayhem. Here Moshe Rabbeinu is essentially asking the Rabbeinu Shloilom, I can see that I'm leaving this world, you've taken me up to a place where I should view the entire land, but the Masa is, you need somebody that should take a flock of sheep, don't allow the Jewish nation that they should be in a position where they are literally like a flock of sheep without a shepherd. So the Pnei Menachem used to say that one of the symbols, one of the simunim of a leader is Asher Yaitze Lifnayim, as in Yiddish they say, is al Ozgein Fazai. Literally means that he's prepared to expire. So I'm going to go back again, that when he passed away from the world, he was walking backwards and forwards on just a couple of days after Purim at night, and he spoke to his wife and he said, he kept on repeating this Mishnah, you know, Kisai Tzai Eish, and Venech Al Gudish, and then it says that when the Koyach of the Mazik goes out, is Einei Mafchem Bein Toivi Vein Ra, and that was the time when the suicide bombers were rampant, buses were exploding, and wherever one went, one looked behind you to see You know, even a car was a few meters behind. People were scared to drive. People were scared to travel on public transport. The country was in a place of panic and havoc. And at that time, there were a few gedolim that were discussing the very, very fearful situation that they were in. And B'nai Menachem took on himself that he was going to pass on from this world. And he told his wife, Shalom. When he went to sleep that night, he went to sleep the opposite way around, and he put his legs towards the door and his head towards the room. Chmun Litzlon, like a person who they take out a bar minhag. And that was the last night of his life. And so he said, before that, he had said that a manig of Klal Yisrael is Ishalu Aidu Ashe Yaitze Lifnaim, as is great Ostigain Fazah. He's prepared to expire, to give his life in order to be Mechapa on Bnei Yisrael, because we've got a Klal, and Misas Tzadikim is Mechaperes. And therefore, he literally was Nuwa Doiresh and Nuwa Mekayim. But the thought which I was going to share with you was the end of the presentation here, which the Moshe Rabbeinu made to the Rebbein Shalom, and he said, V'loisiyeh adas Hashem katzoin asher einohem roya, that the nation of Klal Yisrael should not be like a flock of sheep that have no shepherd. So the question is asked, remind of the first credentials. The first thing that you're asking from the Rebbein Shalom, you know the temperament of each individual person, and you're asking that he should be somebody, but why are you telling the Rebbein Shalom that, please let me know that if you don't have a Manig Yisrael, then the Jewish nation will essentially be like a flock of sheep that are leaderless. The Eibishter has an inkling that if he doesn't supply a leader for Klal Yisrael and a Manig Yisrael, that it's a likelihood that they will be, so to speak, walking around as if like a sheep which has got absolutely no aim and no place. So why would he inform the Rebbein Shalom the last part? He said like this. Moshe Rabbeinu goes back now, if we go to the place where he was asked to become leader, and the Rebbein Shalom wanted to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. The Eibishter came to him and said to him the following. Moshe Rabbeinu, I want to select you, you should be leader, take out Eden from Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I can't do it. You got the wrong man, I can't speak. Moshe Rabbeinu, please, I would like you to take Eden out of Mitzrayim. Nonetheless, no, I can't. Aaron, I've got a brother who's older than me, and it's pastnish that the brother who's senior to me, that he shouldn't be the leader, and I should be the leader, Sgaitish. And then Eibishter says to Moshe Rabbeinu, nonetheless, I would still like you to take the Eden out of Mitzrayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Eibishter, Shlach nu b'yad tishloch, find somebody else. You got the wrong man for the job. So the Eibishter finally eventually told Moshe Rabbeinu, no, it's true, all the things that you said, I heard what you said, I want you to take the Eden out of Mitzrayim, you understand? And I don't want anybody else. And then Moshe Rabbeinu took the job, and for the age of 80 until he passed away to 120, that's exactly what he did, and he was the Manig Yisrael right until Yom Moshe. So the question is, what went on here? This is the same man that actually took a stand by three examples which the Torah gave. He stood up against the Ish Ivri Makeh who was hitting another Yid. He stood up against the Mitzri. He stood up against the in Midian against the Yisro's daughters and the shepherds who were tormenting them. So there was a lot of how do you say, geist, the spirit of leadership there. And yet he came to it over here. Every time the Rebbein Shalom asked him to do it, he deflected it with another reason. And eventually he took it. So the answer to that is that Moshe Rabbeinu is not somebody who is there to assume a political role.
It's a Nuna de Yoyme, you know, where people are very, very, how to speak, ready to take leadership of the most powerful countries of the world. Do they have the credentials? Don't they have the credentials? This is Milse Davide Leglie. Havdle Lef Havdulas, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to the Eibishter, you should know. The only reason that I took this job is because you said to me that I am the only man who is suitable for the job. You told me that I'm the person that's supposed to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. I'm the one supposed to liberate them from this place of bondage. And that is what I did because there was nobody else, like you said, to fill the shoes of leadership at that particular moment. So the Rebbe Shlita said, on this Pusik, the same halach, when it says "V'loisie adas Hashem katzoin asher einu hem roye," it's not that Moshe Rabbeinu is being megala or revealing to the Eibishter that you should know that the reason that they need to have a leader is because without one they will be like stray sheep. No, he's saying to the Rabban Shlolem that one of the credentials, one of the characteristics of leadership, which I'm begging you and I'm pleading you that you should find as somebody to take Klal Yisrael on further, should be that he should be the type of man that will only take the job because V'loisie adas Hashem katzoin asher einem roye, because no one else is suited to the job more than him. And that's the only plausible reason that he would do it, is because the Eibishter Tazoke Heisman, that he made you into a leader. But every other reason under the sun would be deflected in the same way that I deflected those reasons when you asked me to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And I gave you every reason why not to do it. But I took the job because you said to me, no, there's nobody else like you and I want you to do the job. Meimeile, it's not touched that he's ring megala to the Ribbono Shel Olam, something which is clearly obvious. It was one of the characteristics which he was asking of the Ribbono Shel Olam to state that this is one of the positions of leadership that you need. And that's the only reason that he will assume leadership. Every bit.